What's up, everyone? You are tuned in to another episode of The Broke Come Up. I'm Marquise.
And this is Marcus. What's going on? What's going on?
Yeah, what's up? We want to thank you guys for joining us for another episode. And this should be another fun-filled and I think interesting episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, how have you been? How's your week been going?
Hey, week's been going good. I had a few mishaps. I had this refrigerator deal. The refrigerator kind of stopped cooling on me, so I had to figure that out or whatever. But got that taken care of for the most part. Had a good weekend. Was able to kind of go to a little barbecue this weekend and chill out. There was social distancing in play, you know. But I had a good time overall, definitely. What about yourself?
That's good. Yeah, same here. You know, life has just been happening busy, but I did have some time to really, I guess, kind of relax. My cousin came into town from Florida, mm-hmm. and I hung out with her on Thursday and Friday and had a chance to actually go, and I'm going to talk about that a little later. Like, I actually had a chance to, like, go downtown in Atlanta.
And, right.
I'm going to talk about that a little later, but it was still, other than that, you know, it was real chill, just very relaxed. And I was actually staying in the house the entire time. I went over to a friend's house for brunch on mm-hmm. Sunday. Just real chill, man. So, you know, I'm just trying to take it one day at a time.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, yeah, we are going to talk about, I guess, you know, the cancel culture has been very big lately, but now we're seeing that Corona is canceling everything around right. here. So that's what we're going to talk about today, how Rona has canceled our lives and everything that we're doing.
Yeah.
So before we do that, though, I definitely, you know, we got to always talk about our libations and what it is that we are drinking. So what are you on tonight?
Well, you know, I try to do something new. Usually I have more of my, my what I call my bitter red wines, you know what I'm saying? But tonight I got more of kind of a sweet red blend, which is okay. I don't think I'll get it again. But it's all right. You know, it's doing the job, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. What you got?
I think you guys already know. I'm back to my baby tequila. And I got it a little bit. I got just some tequila and Sprite. That's just tequila and Sprite.
Okay. Keeping it simple.
Simple. Mm-hmm. I'm on the last little leg of it right now, so we'll see how I get through this
one. Gotcha.
Yeah. So that should be pretty interesting.
Right.
So yeah.
Okay.
Before I hit it and quit it, I want to read something today because I think it pretty much shook the internet and had everybody in an uproar. So I want to read something.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tweet. It says, "We must now realize the promise of America by trusting God, unifying our vision, and building our future. I am running for president of the United States. Hashtag 2020 vision." That was from none other than Mr. West. Kanye West, that is.
Kanye.
So he announced that he is running for president. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, as we know, it's pretty much pretty late in the game, you know, to bring this up. So it feels like a ploy. It feels just like, you know, I don't know what the agenda is behind it or what, who, why, where, and how, you know, but it just feels like something to be like a distraction or something like that. You know, I don't think he's really serious about it. You know, it's entertainment per se. Right. I think he's saying if, you know, someone else off TV entertainment who's doing this,
Trump, and they're both narcissists. So yeah, I mean, actually feels like he could be president.
Well, I mean, right. You know, so why not throw your hat in on it and see how far you land, you know?
Right.
So,
however, I feel that, yeah, it is a ploy. And I feel like the end game or the agenda is to split the vote because he didn't he didn't fill out the proper paperwork to be, you know, to even run. Like that's already passed. So he didn't even do that.
Right.
But, you know, he's so popular that what, you know, when you go vote, you can write on the name. Like if I wanted, if I didn't want to vote, I could literally write my name in as a candidate for president.
Wow.
You know, and so what I feel is going to happen is you'll just have people write him in. Mm. And so what that does is that splits the vote, because people who would have voted for the other candidate are now voting for him, and they wouldn't have voted for the president anyway, but they just wanted to vote for him. But it took away votes from the other candidate, which still causes the president to be reelected again.
Okay, so you think that's the way that he's approaching it? You think that Kanye is coming as an ally towards Trump?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Interesting.
Because okay. I just don't understand like how people keep forgetting like what this man has done. He mm-hmm. legit said slavery was a choice, and I don't even think it has been a year. Mm-hmm. Maybe a year or two ago, he said slavery was a choice. Then he even came out in his support of the president. So if you are supportive of the president, how is it that you change your stance all of a sudden?
Well, it's funny that you say that, and I think I'm actually thinking that it could actually backfire, because if you are a supporter of being a Republican, which mm-hmm. Kanye maybe to some form of fashion aligns to that, right? Then mm-hmm. it may be where he's taking votes from the president. You know what I'm saying? Not necessarily the Democratic side, you know, but more so because of the fact that his views are in alignment with a Donald Trump or maybe how Republicans mm-hmm. view things. It could be where they vote for him versus Trump, and Trump doesn't get as many votes that he should have had, you know?
He's still going to get the lower middle-class Caucasian population, I feel. Mm. And the thing is, though, Kanye could definitely get swing votes from, you know, those people who feel that way. Mm. But the thing is, he's also going to get some of the hip hop culture, some of the young people who look up to him. People literally idolize this man. No matter what he did, they idolize him. They forgot everything that he said, everything that he did, and all he had to do was put God behind something and say he was doing a church service.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody mentioned anything about what he has done before.
Yeah, sure.
And so all people are going to say, well, he did so much. Look at what he's done. Look, I mean, do we really want Kim Kardashian as our first lady?
Realistically, I don't know that, you know, it would happen anyway. But, I mean, at least we'd have a first lady, though. You know what I'm saying? I mean... the president's wife, like, where has she been? I mean,
she unhappy, but she there.
Doing what? I mean, I haven't heard any in terms of her
her initiative.
Yes, you know,
so
and exposure
that question.
And public exposure in comparison to someone like a Michelle Obama.
Right.
Like, it doesn't even compare.
Well, I asked that question because I remember, like, and I did say, because I remember when Michelle Obama, when Barack first got into office, you know, Michelle Obama's like platform was the let's move thing, being healthy and all that stuff. But then I noticed and I said, you know, I don't remember seeing much about it in the second term. Like, you know, she didn't really do a lot.
Okay.
And my homeboy was like, because she got so much resistance from everybody. So it made it really hard for her to do things.
Okay.
Now, with this first lady, I think they said her initiative was like gardening or like books. I can't remember. It was something that
like books super, like super. Books like reading education books.
Yeah,
or like...
I can't remember. It was really like it was real, real lame what it was.
Okay,
but you know, because I feel that she's so unhappy in the position, like she definitely didn't want this. But I mean, that's a meal ticket. Like she literally has had to not do anything.
No,
just be by this man's side as eye candy.
Well, yeah, so, I guess so.
Yeah, I don't know, but with Kanye, I feel like this is the stupidest thing he could have ever done, and like I really don't like. I scroll past everything that I see of his. If a song comes on that's on my playlist, I skip over it. I mean, because I just can't get down with supporting that man and how people can actually understand that, and they are in two different worlds. Like Kanye is not on our level.
Okay.
Like he's not. He doesn't. He cannot relate to the people of Chicago anymore. He ain't about that life.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. Not that I've been, you know, the most fanatic or fanatical about Kanye, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, obviously he has his views, and I guess we couldn't be too surprised if you have people who actually support it, you know, however nonsensical or far-fetched or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Real talk.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the scary part about living today. It's like, dang, man, y'all really think like this? You know, so that's one person we need to counsel. Rona didn't cancel, but that's one person. But the thing that Rona did cancel, which is what we're going to talk about today, which is our first topic, is the NCAA. Well, not all NCAA. I'm specifically talking about black colleges.
Mm-hmm.
The SIAC right now, Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference.
Right.
So it started with Morehouse. So think about a week or two ago. Morehouse announced that they were canceling all of their fall sports, which would be football and cross country.
Okay.
So they were canceling all of those. So, of course, in the black culture, when you cancel your fall sports, that means you've canceled homecoming.
Yes, sir.
After that, North Carolina A&T came out and said they were canceling their homecoming. And North Carolina A&T, they labeled their homecoming GHO, greatest homecoming on earth. You know, because it's a big like to do.
Yeah, right.
After that, a lot of other schools came out and start doing the same thing. So now it's gotten to the point where, I think all of the schools are in the SIAC at least are canceling their homecoming and their fall sports. What do you think is going to come from that? Just from HBCUs doing it. What do you think is going to happen now?
Oh man. Well, I think for one, the move is unprecedented in comparison to other NCAA Division I squads that make millions upon millions upon billions of dollars each year. Mm-hmm. You know, for the athletic programs that are still on track to keep going despite what's going on with coronavirus. So, you know, it honestly takes a lot of courage to step out there. You know, and the thing is, you know, you're looked at as the hero if it's positive, and if not, you're looked at as the villain to that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll just have to see. I think based upon the way that things have gone, it could be a smart move. But I also think too, you know, in terms of like stuff like homecoming, which is an event. You know, right. if you've gone to HBCU, or even if you haven't, but you've gone to an HBCU homecoming, you understand how epic it can get out there. You know what I'm saying? Right. And just seeing people you haven't seen in a while, and just having that good time with folks that you used to kick with.
You prep for homecoming.
Yes, you
364
do.
Days before the actual homecoming come, because you need to make sure that you ready to flex on everybody that you went to school with.
Right.
And we can't do that now.
Yeah.
Like, you heard that from us.
Yeah, and at least you'll miss a year of that. You know what I'm saying?
You can't miss a year of stuff. Like, you know, it's like you break tradition. Now, what I suggested, I was talking with a friend about this. I said, I remember I went to Benedict College, and before Benedict got a football team, this was back in the early 90s. They didn't have a football team, so they would have homecoming during their basketball season.
Okay.
And so homecoming would be like February or something like that. It would be in that time.
Okay.
I said, you know what? They could easily move homecoming to basketball season.
Huh.
Easily move it back. Because, I mean, it's been like 30 years since they've had it like that. But schools have it like that. But schools that don't have football teams, a lot of them have their homecomings during that basketball season.
And who's to say that it won't happen like that? You know,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
it'll be a lot more congested
because
you don't have the openness of a football field. And that also concerns me, because I'm like, if everybody's still big on this social distancing stuff, you cannot put people in a gym or an auditorium, gymnasium or coliseum. You cannot put people in an arena and say, all right, here's your homecoming. I'll put them in that small space now because the space has gotten small.
Well, see, and that's still the bottom line of what we're talking about here, though, right? Because even if you decided to have homecoming this year, what are the chances by which it's still going to be as populated as it has been?
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? So
people would be like, bump that.
Yeah. even, you know, if you start looking still at the trajectory of how many cases we've had and that continues to increase or be amongst that number, you're going to have a lot of trepidation about going out and saying, okay, you know, it's been no time that I've been a homecoming and it hadn't just been crazy thick. You know what I'm saying? So I still think, you know, you still have to look at it like that and know, like, you still would be losing out on the however much money that goes into, whether you have vendors coming there, whether you have people buying booths, whether you have people, you know, just congregating and all the consumerism that comes with that, right? You know what I'm saying? So I mean, you know, it's something that I think was probably looked at on multiple angles and said, okay, this is something we need to cut short. Obviously, first in the best interest of people's safety, but in a financial way too, that it probably wouldn't cut, you know, what it normally would, you know?
Right. Yeah, and that's, I think, for like the SIAC, with them and other schools, other HBCUs canceling those fall sports.
Right.
You lose out. Yeah, we don't have homecoming, but ultimately you save a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it costs to run a program. Yeah, you might make some money back, but it costs to run a program.
Right.
And, you know, HBCUs are already underfunded anyway. And so, you know, their athletic programs are not the best. They're not
A1. Right.
So that's why, you know, you have some good athletes that choose those higher D1 schools because, you know, the resources are there. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have to worry about putting out resources. I would hope they can, you know, financially plan financially better or whatever.
But, yeah.
You know, that's something that I think is a positive of them not having it because it allows them to save some money.
Yeah. And I understand that, but I think a corollary, you know, what you're saying too is also the fact that you had some people who had you know, committed to, you know, Division I schools that, you know, maybe they would have, you know, been able to be on the team and go through there and get some level of prosperity or whatever. And they actually have decided to go to HBCUs instead.
That guy the guy, I don't know if you saw the article, the really tall guy. I didn't really read it.
Okay.
He chose Howard University.
Mm-hmm.
To play at Howard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So even that it almost seems like the athletes now are kind of shifting in terms of, yeah, I can go ahead and be, you know, this athlete and do something that I've really been doing very well. Mm-hmm. But with the advent of the events that have happened over the past, you know, months and all that kind of stuff, I think it's shifting, you know, people's ideas of like what it means to go to college. You know what I'm saying? And the things that they want to be able to go and become a part of culturally, you know what I'm saying? Other than just, okay, just the football, the athletic component. And yeah, I'm not saying that you're still not going to indulge and engage in some type of culture in it, but just shifting to say, okay, I am picking an HBCU to, you know, to go to. It's kind of sending a message. You know what I'm saying?
It does. Yeah. It really does. But, you know, with the HBCUs kind of leading the charge of canceling their fall sports, I wonder, you know, if your SEC or your ACC, you know, schools are going to cancel theirs. And how is that going to affect? Because, you know, yeah, we can cancel it and lose a few dollars, because those
you
might have a couple of big games a year. You know, they might draw a couple of $100,000 or $1 million or whatever.
Right.
But the SEC, that's a drop in the bucket for them.
Oh, I'm sure.
How is that? If they cancel, think about the advertising dollars, the television dollars.
Yeah.
Just, you know, that going the global perspective, people around the world watch these.
Yeah.
And if they cancel them, how does that affect them? And that's why I'm like, I don't think people will probably fight to not cancel those sports.
Yeah, this is true. And I think that you're still in between a rock and a hard place, because you're saying that, you know, if these sports are going to be going on and if they're going to have an audience, you know, as many as we see usually in these college football games. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're still going to have instances where, I mean, if we're talking about this coronavirus thing, right, where it's going to be a cesspool, you know what I'm saying, for other infections. And those are going to be big. Those are big deal infections. I mean, we can talk about if someone had a party, you know, a little college party or something one weekend. But you're talking about big infection right here. You're talking about people going to, maybe 15, 20 counties out of somewhere. You know what I'm saying? And being the nucleus of, different instances of this thing spreading. So it's a lot of things to consider. And yes, it's going to be a lot of money that, is maybe not made or lost. You know what I'm saying?
I'm thinking a lot of them might not want to cancel because, like I said, it's a big draw. But people, they only remember, like that saying, you only are big as your, you're only as good as your best hit or something like that. I'm going to use University of South Carolina. Let's just say University of South Carolina decides to cancel. Mm-hmm. If they take that year off, but Clemson decides to keep playing, who is the public going to see? They're going to see Clemson. They're not focused on USC because they're not out there.
Okay.
And so even if this big pandemic is going and yes, people can die, if you're not visible, nobody knows who you are. And so I'm thinking people are going to try to be visible so they can stay relevant, and then it increases their enrollment. Mm-hmm. It increases their people going because people know about them. They were strong enough. Look, they made it through this whole thing. They showed us that they can play. They're good. You know, like all these positive things are happening. If it goes good, I'm thinking people are thinking from that perspective.
Well, right. And that is pretty ideal. But mm-hmm. more times than not, it just doesn't happen like that.
Right.
Let's just be all the way clear about that. Like, you can say, okay, well, you know, we're trying to do this and still try to be visible and have our football games and stuff like that. But for the other teams, like a Morehouse or whatever, that decided not to do it, and the kinds of, the kinds of cases of coronavirus that they allowed not to happen because of them doing that, then what kind of light is that put on Morehouse like that?
It does. In terms of, you know what I'm saying?
So it depending upon really the way that things go, it can cascade from one side to the other. The person who's mm-hmm. the school who decided to say, yeah, we're going to go ahead and not play this year, and we're going to cancel all this. You're looked at in a wonderful light. You know, if you save lives, you save people getting the epidemic. But on the other hand, like you said, it could be where, if it's not that high, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, right. you may not take that much of a bump. I personally think that we have at least another wave or two to go through, despite the one that we're in, you know right. what I'm saying, to deal with this year that, you know, is going to, you know, tell a lot, you know, in terms of who's infected and what's going on and what's not going on, you know.
Right, yeah. That's going to be interesting, you know. Seeing what's going to happen. And then with the cancellations, the last thing I want to talk about with that is in the black schools, they had an article recently, Bethune-Cookman, and I think FAM is a part of this too, but Bethune-Cookman in Daytona Beach, Florida, which is a part of the MEAC, the HBCU, they decided that they put a statement out last week as well, I think, or the week before, saying that they are leaving the MEAC and they're going to join the SWAC, the Southwestern Athletic Conference. And that's schools that are normally in Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, Texas. Mm-hmm. Those schools are in the Southwest.
Right.
Well, it's interesting that these schools are leaving that particular conference because of money. I feel like it's all because of money.
Mm-hmm.
But with them canceling all of these things, I'm like, how is that going to affect them now? Because I feel like Bethune-Cookman, and if FAM is doing it, I feel like they are doing those things because of their band program and the exposure that particular conference gets.
Right.
And that's what I was saying about, like, even the bigger D1 schools, they want to keep their name out there. They want to keep getting exposure because as long as I'm exposed and I'm in that popular thing, people want to still come to me, you know? Okay. So if Bethune switches to the SWAC, they get more than just people from Daytona and the Florida surrounding areas for the most part. Mm. They expand their reach a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's going to be interesting to see with everything that's happening, if they cancel theirs as well, because none of the, I don't think any D1 program has canceled. You know, SIAC is D2, but I don't think any like D1 program has canceled. So I'm interested to see if they do it, because that, you know, that's the NCAA's bread and butter for real.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Wow. You know, yeah. And I think that another point comes up where, you know, if you have these teams that are transitioning to these different conferences that have had historic games, you know what I'm saying? Or games that, you know, that have been age old rivalries, you know what I'm saying? Where people come out and come watch the games and that kind of thing, you know, you kind of divorce that a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Where you're breaking some traditions and maybe starting others. You know what I'm saying? With a bigger bag, if you get what I'm saying, in mind. You know, so I mean, it just feels like with the things that are going on, that there is, it feels like there are going to be a lot of breakages, you know, of the way that people or corporations or organizations or schools have been doing things, and it's shifting over to something else, you know, definitely.
Exactly. Yeah. That's going to be very interesting in the next few weeks to see, you know, what happens, because, you know, Americans live on sports.
So yes, yes.
I'm
kind of one of them.
You cancel that, I'm just going to come from the Vegas perspective. You cancel sports, that's going to push a lot of people over the edge, you know, with that. Mm-hmm. But I want you, like, one thing I want to move on to this topic, and you were telling me about it, but I want you to go into detail. It was about the, I guess, still keeping with our culture and counseling, since they done canceled everything else. They canceled years ago our reparations.
Yes.
And you were telling me that they were possibly thinking about doing reparations. So what was that all about?
Okay, so yeah. So basically you have the former owner of BET, Robert Johnson, and basically he had an idea about reparations. And he was saying that we could come up with, through taxpayers' dollars and other kinds of things, $14 trillion, you know, for slavery reparations, where pretty much each descendant of a slave, and I guess it had to be proven, you know, some way or the other, would get around $350,000 in cash payments. And they wouldn't get that as a lump sum. They get it over, you know, a duration of, you know, 30 years or something like that. And basically this was calculated by Robert Johnson, saying, okay, well, on the average, blacks get about a tenth of the wealth, or accumulate a tenth of the wealth over a lifetime that most white folks, the average white person, does.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to, you know, to put this in, you know, and multiply and try to make this, these economic gains, you know, for blacks to be, as, you know, to be equitable or to be in the ballpark of the earnings, you know, of what white folks have, you see what I'm saying? Then this would be the amount of money that you would need to make this happen, you know? So basically that was brought up, you know what I'm saying? Now, obviously it appears that this is a skeleton of an idea. You know, we obviously, as you've, and we've talked, you know, to move things forward, there would be a lot of other things that we'd have to kind of have conversations about.
Yeah. You know, it's still, I mean, cause I like the idea, because, you know, I'm down for some reparations, you know,
right.
I've gone on Ancestry and 23andMe
right.
And traced my stuff back. So, hey, I think I can be okay with it.
Yeah, sure. Means,
you know, I helped set my family up.
Okay.
But what about, you know, those people who have no way of getting it? Because, you know, one thing we talked about was how I was on Ancestry.com, I think, did a little trial, and it was so hard trying to, like, trace my family's, like, actual history back. Like, I knew my grandmother's name. I knew my grandfather's name. I put in where they were born, but it was like I couldn't find anything. I think I might have found, like, a birth certificate, but they were born in, like, the early 1900s.
Okay, okay.
You know, we, at that time, were not really given paperwork.
Sure.
So, you know, how many people are going to actually be lost in the system? Yeah. And then if that happens, like, this just came to me just now, will that divide us? Because let's say, for instance, you cannot prove it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't prove that you come from, you know, a slave heritage, but I can.
Okay.
I'm getting my check every year. Like, I'm sorry, God, you ain't got no check.
Right.
How do you feel now?
Well, I mean, it's a variety of ways of looking at it. It could be a divisive thing, you know, if, you know, we're not doing things collectively with the money, you know, that brings property value or value up in general of a certain area. You know what I'm saying? So let's say, for example, you know, out of, and it is this old saying that says, you know, the five people you have around you, you know, that's an indication of your own success or economic class or status or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just say you happen to be the one person out of the five friends that you have or the four friends that you have that did not get any money for reparations, but they did. You know what I'm saying? So how does that enable you? You know, or you know what I'm saying? Like, it could be something where, yes, it's jealousy and that kind of thing, you know, or where I wish I had what you had, and it could be a divisive. But if those friends had said, okay, we have an agenda, you know, to collectively build upon each other, and you're included in this, you know.
And that sounds like the dream.
You know?
But, you know, historically, and just being real, as African-Americans, we don't have that mindset to look out for one another, like the majority. Mm-hmm. Some of us, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Look out for your brother. Look out for your sister. Help those that, but you know, a lot of times, and I think it's a mentality issue because of the way you were brought up as slaves and things.
Okay.
People were brought up to have a crabs in a barrel mentality.
Sure.
You know, you're looked at, if you can please the person at the top, you're the go-to person. Think about an education. You know, you might be at a school and you got that one person that's always trying to make sure they outshine everybody else, no matter what. They, you know, because they're going to be their own self so that they can stand out, not working as a team collectively.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody does it. I know every culture does it, but you know, I'm just speaking for blacks because I'm black. It's very hard for us to work together. Like, you got to make sure you find a solid five people, you know, to make sure. But what about those people who never had anything? You know, like those people who, you know, they live from check to check. They used the government assistance and, you know, just using a name. Chiquita got her check. Rainisha got her check.
Mm-hmm.
Yolanda got her check. But Toya and Tracina ain't got their checks.
Okay.
Are they going to really look out for Toya and Tracina? Or are they going to be like, nah, I got to take care of my... You know, like, that's what... So, like...
Well, I mean, it comes down to that. But then my thing is, just how tight are y'all then?
But, so that's what I'm saying. But, like...
You know what I'm saying? So I'm just like, we talking about the friendships here. You know what I'm saying? Like, there can be friendships in name, you know, or in word. You know what I'm saying? But... My thing is, what kinds of adversity have these groups gone through? You know what I'm saying?
And I think they can go through a lot of adversity, but you can also be taught things. And that's what I was saying. Like, I feel like as a community, it should still be offered, where you learn, like, financial freedom tips, financial stability tips. So therefore, if you had that, like you could be the set it off girls. You know, like, you that close. But, you know... Do you know what to do when you get a certain amount of money? Because normally, if those girls are that close, when they get money, their first instinct is to help themselves.
Mm.
Because that's all it's ever been. When you don't have anything, who do you do? What do you do? You help yourself. Yeah, you might help some people occasionally, but you're going to make sure you're good first.
Yeah.
You know, and not thinking that, oh, this person ain't got nothing. I got something, but I got to make sure I'm good first. Because all they're going to do is they're going to keep coming back to me, asking me for more stuff. So that's why I'm saying, like, if there's some type of education, that would be that. I think that will make it stronger, because then it teaches us, like, everybody, how to work together, how to make sure that, yeah, this person ain't got nothing, but you giving them this helps them to build this. But that person has to know that they're going to build something, you know, in hopes of making it grow as well and not being dependent.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But I also think that the move is unprecedented. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So again, to suggest that the ways that, you know, things have gone on is going to kind of roll the same way. Maybe not so much. I mean, you know, there's been some studies where, you know, maybe historically where African-Americans who have been locked out of red line out of certain communities and tax brackets, mm-hmm. once they have been allowed access into those, not necessarily as being rich, but just in the lifestyle of it, you know what I'm saying? Having a right. house, being in an environment or community that takes care of itself, you know what I'm saying? That kind of thing. These attitudes have shifted, not from the dog eat dog that you're referring to, that right. maybe all these girls came from. You see what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. to me, there's a mentality that is being bred there. You know what right. I'm saying? And I think that economically, you know, you may have a little bit more money in the pocket. Maybe you're thinking differently about what things I need to do. I'm thinking differently now because I have more access to stuff. I have more access to maybe getting information or getting education. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And I think that plays into it. Now, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it mirrors historically what you've been referring to as this crabs in the barrel thing. But mm-hmm. I do think the fact that your economic tax bracket has changed, I right. think that makes a difference in what people are valuing and what they're trying to hold on to. And then how can they build on that as well? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I agree. It does do that. I just think that when you change a tax bracket, your mentality does change, but also, like, the more money you make, the more you spend. So that's what I mean by, like, are you making the best decision? Because, yeah, my mindset has changed. I want to get this now because I can afford it. Like, when I started working, I'm fresh out of college. I made stupid financial choices. Mm-hmm. Stupid, because I was getting money, and I'm like, ooh. Because I can, I will. Not mm-hmm. thinking down the road.
Okay.
Now, fortunately, I've been able to consistently have a job and consistently have income where, okay, I understand that I made a mistake here this time. Now I know what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
If you get that large lump sum of money, are we saying let's let everybody fail once and then, you know, come back and say, mm-hmm. all right, now we learned our lesson? Because everybody still don't learn a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Think about good times. They kept getting in poor people problems mm-hmm. and could never get out the ghetto. Mm-hmm. Could never get out because they mm-hmm. kept making decisions that were not like financially the best.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you're still going to have quite a bit of that. You know, it's still a thing of where, yeah, you're going to get some money. People are not going to know what to do with it. And they're going to, you know, act crazy with it and, you know, and that kind of thing, you know, but I do think that, like, again, there's also a space where you do have some who, I mean, hey, have been, you know, grinding with whatever they've had, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And they say, okay, just let me get 20,000 and right. I'm able to flip that. You know what I'm saying? And you've mm-hmm. had some people that for whatever reason, however they got the income, whether it was legally or illegally, they've been able to do that. You know what
That's
I'm saying?
That's true.
So I do think, you know, you do have to start throwing some rocks in the pond and getting some waves, you know, mm-hmm. to emanate out to affect how other people are looking at stuff. You know what I'm saying? And to right. affect, okay, this is the way it's been, and it's this, but I'm seeing a lot more people, you know, that are taking care of themselves, you know what I'm saying, that, yeah, they got some money, and you have some people that come from the bottom that just don't spend like that. They're just like, right. man, I ain't had nothing, and mm-hmm. I'm going to hold on to every dollar that I have. You know, you do have those that, right. you know, and that do it like that, but realistically, I hear what you're saying. I just think you're going to kind of have that on some level. It's just how do we manage that, you know,
yeah,
to the most minimal part of that. I hear you. Yeah.
Because how do you manage it so that, you know, yeah, you're going to mess up. Okay. But mm-hmm. listen, you done messed up three times now.
Right.
Like, are we, because at that point, then it is that revolving cycle of let me use the government. And in this case, the government is the African-American community because we all put the work together.
Right.
So, yeah, right. Like, let me keep using them to get what I need mm-hmm. and, you know, live off of them because I know they got it.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, how do you educate them so that they get out of that mindset? Because, you know, some people have that mindset of, I don't want to do this. I don't want to depend on nobody.
Well, see,
and, some people have the exact opposite mindset.
And I don't even say this. What programs are you taking when you don't have any money? There are some programs now that you can take and say, okay, here's a financial literacy course that you can get for free, or that's a weekend something, or even, or it might be even an online something you can
read. And that's why you make it mandatory. When you giving this money to them, we giving you this money.
You can make
It's mandatory now, because at that point you gotta go. It's like the NACA thing. You know, when you buy the house, you gotta go to those things if you want this.
Yeah, right. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't go. I'm just saying that this is what happens. We're even talking about now that they. I'm just saying in terms of what would you do on your own. You understand what I'm saying? Because the point of the matter is, once you get that money, you have an ability to kind of do stuff on your own. You're not dependent. You're not dependent upon a check anymore for livelihood. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So my thing is now. I mean, yeah, I know. You know, you're working and you got jobs and things like that. But in the sense of saying, okay, what would you do on your own now to better that situation? Are you already on a trend of doing that?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And I think that for those that are doing that and they fall into some money, it's like, oh, okay, I'm just about to keep going what I've been doing. I'm just doing it on a different level now, because I now have some more options and more resources to do things. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But you still, if you're looking at someone who's maybe not trying to take advantage of those opportunities in the here and now, then yeah, I think there's just something to say towards that, you know, in terms of how to get those people, you know, how to get people aligned towards looking at it where, yeah, I want to do something better, you know, financially or livelihood wise with myself. You know what I'm saying? And how that would translate again if you had money, you know, or got a lump sum of money or payments like that, you know.
Right. Well, Bob Johnson, I hope that you can make this thing a reality. Because I definitely would benefit from it. I have plans. I can help my family as well as myself out.
Yes, absolutely.
And make this thing stretch.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I mean, do what you got to do, Bob.
Absolutely.
And let's do this. But you know, the last thing I want to talk about, it deals with reparations, or kind of what this whole thing was about. And it's just a random question. Are we still protesting?
And from the looks of things, it's died down.
Remember earlier I was saying a little thing. That's why I'm asking that question.
Okay.
Because I went out this weekend, and Thursday night it was very, like, you know, limited, like how it was when we would go out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not many people. You know, everybody's social distancing. It's just very. But it's still a very low key, chill vibe. Very chill.
Mm-hmm.
However, Friday, my cousin stayed downtown, like across from the CNN Center. Mm-hmm. So that tells you where I had to go. But I go downtown and I'm like, I almost ran a red light because I noticed the Ferris wheel was on. Like, people were in line for the Ferris wheel. And they were literally on top of each other in line.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, so what happened to the, like, you know, staying 6 to 13 feet apart, like from people or something like that? So I was like, dang, people out. I get to the hotel. The lobby is filled. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like Freaknik or Black Bike Weekend. it was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, like, dang, just 2 weeks ago, they was bombing this whole area saying, we want justice, we want justice, we want justice. We ain't doing that no more?
Well, I mean, let's be real. For number one, it wasn't everybody. You got a certain sector of people that are, you know, want to do that. And you know, in the sense that you feeling like, well, all the marching and stuff that I've done hasn't really, you know, made nobody scared. So let me go ahead and start messing up folks' property, and that'll get your attention. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not condoning it. You understand what I'm saying? But I'm just saying that is what had to happen in order for there to be action. You know, for all the folks to say, okay, now let's start looking at some bills and let's start firing, you know, police or corrupt police that have been doing stuff for years that have had records of doing things and finally we get rid of them, you know what I'm saying? So I think it's a hodgepodge of stuff going on, you know what I'm saying? I feel like economically, because of unemployment and things, you're thinking you're kind of two minds. You're saying, yeah, I want to, you know, be able to support and be supportive of our cause. And at the same time, you have a family at home that needs to be able to live life and have some things and that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like, you know, you're probably stretched between those extremes. And not only that, with all of the inundation of all kinds of information that you have to deal with on a regular basis, I mean, that's a lot to kind of keep up with. You know what I'm saying? So because you have to feel like in this fluid world that we live in now, you need to have these, you need to be able to be knowledgeable about what's going on to make good decisions about what needs to be done. Like where I need to go to, you know, the shop to get the lowest, you know, cost of, you know, the food that I need, you know what I'm saying? To budget properly, you know, or whatever else, you know what I'm saying? So you got to me, you just have a lot weighing on people, you know, and again, if maybe there's not as much of a strong foundation or an organization in terms of how do we continue to carry out this initiative in ways that are going to affect change, you know what I mean?
Right.
Then you will see some wanting numbers like I think you see now.
Yeah, I mean it just seems weird because I was saying whether we want to believe it or not, people. You know, we need leaders okay. in some sort. And, okay. and the leaders, you follow whatever the leaders are doing. And so if the leaders are out protesting and saying it ain't right, it ain't right, it ain't right, mm-hmm. we follow and say it ain't right, it ain't right, it ain't right.
Okay.
But when the leaders are all of a sudden just getting quiet and you don't hear from them, and by leaders, I'm not even talking about the actual, like, activists. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think of the guy Kendrick Sampson. He's okay. like an activist. He's an actor. But, like, he's out there every day. So, yeah, mm-hmm. he could be considered, like, yeah. But the thing is, I'm thinking of, like, those celebrities that were all on social media posting.
Okay.
A lot of people get their cue from them because they're public figures.
Okay.
When you don't see them anymore, then it dies down. And, you know, it's almost like Freddy Krueger. When you don't say Freddy Krueger name no more, what happens? Nobody thinks about it.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I think that again, like I said before, there's such an inundation of who's doing this and who's doing that and how's this going, how's that going, and what I'm supporting and what I'm not supporting, and you know, this particular situation going on and that particular situation going on and whatever, and all of that together in its accumulative effects is a very stressful thing to have to deal with day in and day out.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So so my thing is, and I might be getting a little esoteric here, but I feel like I mean, at this point, with all the information that's coming on, you have to have a discerning eye. Your third eye has to be open about what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? In a way where, hey, you're being able to discern with, you know, to have some level of discernment about for you personally or you collectively in terms of your family, whatever, who you need to listen to, what way you need to go, that's maybe not guided by all of these different ways in which people that we look at our authorities are going or saying stuff.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you're getting stretched in these different ways and you're bonded to these people because you respect them and want to follow them. They're your authority. But at the same time, it's like, where's the discernment there for yourself in terms of what path you need to take?
Right. Yeah. And I just think that people, we want people to have that, but I just don't. And I don't know, maybe it's just my lack of belief, but I don't feel that some people have that sense of discernment, or, you know, they need to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. You need to do this, and here is why you need to do it. Because some people just don't think that far ahead, you know, because that's not what their mind tells them. Like, they think based off of that, you know, but you have some people that are free thinkers and, you know, can think on their own and, you know, make okay decisions based off of their thoughts and critical thinking skills. But then you have some people who you need to tell them what to do.
Well, and I think I'll say this, if we're going to think about people in this determinate way, then what hope do we have for any transformation?
That's
this speaks to your point. I mean, if you feel like people are just determinatively or in a box or they're this in a level of fixity, you know, hopefully I'm saying that right. What can you hope for them to do that's different? What can you hope for them to do that they can change or that is transformative? If you feel like all that they are is just in this box and they can't move or do anything other than that.
Right. And I don't want to seem like, and I don't think everybody, I mean, I do think it's a certain subset of people. You know, who that is, I don't really know, but I just think it's a certain set of people who are like that. And it's very sad because there still can be transformation, but I feel like it has to come from, like, we can have our own discernment, but if we kind of almost agree for the most part with the majority, even if we have our own discernment, those people that don't have a mind of their own, how do you get them on your side to say, hey, I'm looking out for your best interest at heart? And that's what I'm saying. Like, they, you know, those little bit of people don't know what to do and they need guidance.
Okay.
And if they don't have that guidance, then what? And that's what I was saying about, like, the protesting, because we, like, I wasn't about to protest it anyway. You know, like, I'll watch it and, you know, you need me to do some paperwork or something, sure. But if that's how you're saying that this is what we need to do to get our voice out, get our voice heard, why we stop?
It's because it's not the easiest one. It's not the easiest thing to do, you know, and you know, you're talking about a dealing with perseverance, not just the lashing out, you know what I'm saying, or I'm expressing myself kind of thing, which it feels like, you know, people who are enraged want to do, but more so being able to communicate.
Right.
And to me, the expression and the communication are different things. When you start talking about the fact that communication deals with, you know, being a little bit more detailed and being a little bit more knowledgeable about what I need to do to effectively get a message across, you know, to a group of people or someone else or whatever, as opposed to the fact that I am releasing, you know what I'm saying? Or I am, you know, getting rid of, you know, blowing some steam off or whatever, you know right. what I'm saying? And I think that's a lot of that, you know, in protesting or whatever. So, you know, yes, you need that passion of that, but how do you find the fine line to be able to effectively communicate what you're saying? You know what I'm saying? To start to have dialogues with groups that maybe have been divisive and separated for so long that there's now been enough amicable communication, you know, for folks to sit down, you know what I'm saying? And not to say that everything's going to happen in one day or one night, but at least those conversations are being had, you know what I'm saying? Which takes effort on whatever party's behalf, you know what I'm saying? For real.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what I just hope that can happen, because it was like we had such a strong momentum and like I don't see anything about it anymore. So it's like,
yeah, well, and it's still early. I think that, you know, you have that release, and the release may be something that may just be therapeutic for people to get on to doing other things. You know what I'm saying? So I think we're still waiting, you know, to see, you know, what comes of it, because it's not going to be something that happens overnight. But who's to say that people who are not having conversations like us, like we're having right now, or groups are getting together and just based off that energy and releasing and now getting to a level of solidarity amongst each other, that they're now starting to do some real serious planning. Like we really don't know as of yet. And I think it takes time to kind of see what kinds of things can come to fruition, you know, in this manner.
Exactly. I hope it gets better. I hope it like continues, and I hope we continue, because I mean, I don't know the answer clearly. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm not a protester.
Gotcha. But
I just want to like know, what's our goal? What are we doing? What are we really doing?
And it may be many goals on many fronts.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and it may just be where you decide whatever goal you're aligned with to go ahead and pursue, and then me, myself, or whoever else, and collectively just creates a grid or a matrix or a network of being able to improve this thing. Because obviously it's like a web, right? So you can't just be at one node of the web and push there and feel like
you're going to be able to do something with the whole web. Like, everyone has to kind of, in a rhythmic kind of way, be having some force at these points, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
In a way to get things to be able to collectively move forward. And I think that could be, this could be the beginning of that organization.
Oh, let's hope.
Yeah.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
I ain't going to lead the charge, but let's hope mm-hmm. that it gets done, you know? Yeah. All right. So good. I think that gets us to a good stopping point.
Yeah,
for,
I think so.
This show. That was very insightful. I learned some stuff. We got a chance to talk about some things and put our perspective on things. So I think that was really good today.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. So I hope that you all enjoyed the show today and you all got something from it. And if so, please leave us your feedback and also tell us some things that you would like for us to discuss as well. So you can hit us up on the email again at thebrokecomeup@gmail.com and also follow us on IG at thebrokecomeup and, you know, keep up with what we've got going on. So I think we'll have some more good things coming up in the next few weeks as well.
All right.
Yep. So again, this is Marquise.
And Marquise here.
Yeah. Saying follow your dreams, dance like no one is watching, and hustle till you can't hustle no more.
Peace.
All right. We'll be right back.